here in Western Sydney, the pressures of population growth and strains on housing and other infrastructure are certainly not abstract political debates. They are the lived reality. In recent weeks, those pressures have also fueled debate about multiculturalism and social cohesion, sparked by comments from One Nation leader Pauline Hanson. Well, Chris Minns is the Premier of New South Wales and joins me this morning. Premier, good morning. Welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate you having me on.
There's been a lot of argument this week over Senator Hanson's comments that multiculturalism in Australia has failed. You've often called multiculturalism a success story. Do you think the arguments from One Nation, are they finding an audience? Are they getting any traction?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's hard for me to speak for everybody, and they certainly are rising in the polls, but I'm a product of Sydney. I've grown up in multicultural Sydney. I'm raising my family in Sydney, and it's the best country and the best city in the world. So, I mean, I think if you've travelled around the world and you've seen what every other country and state and territory and city has to offer, nothing beats Sydney. And part and parcel of that, part and parcel of its characteristics is that people come from all around the world, different religions, different races, and yet we don't just tolerate one another. We often celebrate it, and we live side by side. So I think that there's just so much hyperbole from Senator Hanson. I saw her on radio the other day saying, we don't want Sharia law, we don't want multiple marriages, we don't want gangs with machetes, as if you support multiculturalism, you must be for Sharia law. Well, that's just complete garbage. It's a sort of bullshit that she's been peddling for a long time, and it's just not true.
Do you think that is sticking at all with some voters?
Oh, maybe, but I mean, that's the arm wrestle of politics. We've got to, you know, you've got to explain your vision or your plan or your idea of what Sydney should be, and people are entitled to challenge it, but we've got to get in the ring and explain or fight for what's great about our city.
Premier, in the media sector this morning, there's the news that Karl Stefanovic, former host of The Today Show, has left the network, effective immediately, following his podcast foray, particularly this latest interview with extreme right-wing figure Tommy Robinson from the UK. What do you think about what's unfolded?
I haven't put much thought into it, if I'm going to be honest. I mean, I don't have any time for someone like... Is it Tommy Robinson? I don't tend to know much about him. I think he's a fringe figure in the UK. As for Carl, I like Carl. So I have to say I think Nine knew what they had when they employed him a long time ago, and they've given him multiple contracts. So, I'm not going to knock him. I think it's a strange choice of interview guest, but probably doesn't sum up Carl's, you know, life and approach to, you know, civic affairs and interviewing style and everything else.
How do you see the arguments here? One says it's freedom of speech. You speak to people who might make you feel uncomfortable, you disagree with. Another view may be that speaking with people like Tommy Robinson is platforming extreme views. How do you see it, Premier?
I don't put a lot of thought into it. I guess my hand's pretty full here in New South Wales. My general sense about the rise of the populist right, the far right around the world, is that if it's taken over governments in Argentina, Brazil, Hungary, Italy, potentially the UK, certainly the US, and the idea that it can be ignored is just not viable. We really do have to get into the proverbial ring and explain what we like and what is important about the liberal democracies that have grown up. Also the things that need to change. And, I mean, that's certainly the debate we're having here in New South Wales and one I'm committed to participating in.
We're broadcasting from Penrith today, which has a very diverse community. One Nation has openly said it wants to try to win votes in these seats at the next election. Let's have a quick listen to what some of the locals have been saying to Radio National Breakfast.
We've got to stop immigration. There's enough now.
Man, I've seen so many people that can't even speak English, but they're driving around with a $40,000 to $50,000 car. Like, you know, and Pauline Hanson wants to stop that, you know, which I'm not against.
I think it's a change that Australia definitely needs.
She kind of really wants to bring back a true blue Aussie.
Pauline Hanson has a lot to say, but doesn't have much to back it up.
People are very unhappy, so they're just going to get
like a little bit of revenge, I think it is.
I think a lot of younger Australians maybe don't fully understand what is being done to help them.
That's some of the voices from the streets of Penrith this week. What do you make of some of those sentiments, Premier?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of those sentiments in suburbs and towns right across New South Wales. They wouldn't be exclusive to Penrith, if I'm going to be honest about it. Mm. I mean, I think that there's probably a mix of views. There'd be some who have a view that they've got a legitimate perspective on immigration. They want to make sure that governments are scrutinising it, that are looking at the rate. They've got concerns about the number of people that came in, literally just the quantum, the number of people that came in the immediate aftermath of COVID. I think we were hitting 500,000 during those years, and it was very difficult for services and infrastructure and housing to keep up with that rate and that pace. I think my sense is that some people have a view about the rate of immigration, for Pauline Hanson to jump over that and say it's a question of Australian monoculture, where we hive off other aspects of the characteristics of Australia, is a step too far for a lot of people, even a lot of people that were considering voting for One Nation. And I can understand legitimate concerns around the immigration rate, but to throw out some of the successful characteristics of modern Australia, and in particular Sydney, I think it'd be a huge mistake for our city and our state.
Parts of Western Sydney are being asked to absorb a big share of Sydney's housing growth, but some residents in these growth corridors say that roads and public transport and other services haven't caught up. Why should communities accept more density when they feel the infrastructure promised years ago still hasn't been finished for them?
Well, look, I think there's a few things that we're doing to remediate that. It's very difficult to do, and in some cases it hasn't been fast enough, but we've made, we think, major strides. Firstly, trying to rebalance where density goes. I mean, the arguments for the West communities in Western Sydney are absolutely bang on. You can't have a situation where 80% of Sydney's new housing growth goes on the western fringe of Sydney, whilst the rest of Sydney, certainly those that have got access to public transport and fixed existing infrastructure, miss out. So we've tried to rebalance where Sydney grows by going up closer to the city, where there's public transport links, where there's existing infrastructure, and taking a lot of pressure off Western Sydney by saying, you're not going to take all the housing growth. Secondly, we're plunging billions and billions of dollars into new hospitals and new public schools for Western Sydney, both of which both those areas of spending were not attended to by the previous government in Western Sydney for a 10-year period, and we've turned that around. This latest budget has seen unprecedented record amounts spent on Rouse Hill Hospital, Mount Druitt Hospital, Blacktown Hospital, a new Westmead Children Hospital. It's exactly where we should be spending the money, but it's long overdue.
Just finally, Premier, ASIO has released its annual threat assessment this week. That's the first since the Bondi terror attack. And the head of ASIO said the threat level doesn't tell the full story. How do you see the threat level of terrorism in the wake of the Bondi attack? What have we learned?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm worried about that more than anything else. The horror of Bondi in December of last year was shocking. It was Australia's worst terrorism event. It happened in my state on my watch. So I worry about it every single day. We take the advice and the threat alerts from ASIO incredibly seriously. I know that the Police Commissioner Mal Lanyon and the Police Minister Catley do as well. And we work closely with those agencies to make sure that when information is given to us, it's acted on in a timely way. We've also pursued legislative changes to try and make New South Wales as safe as possible. I can't promise this won't happen again, but I can promise we'll do everything we possibly can to find and hunt down those that would commit a terrorist act in our city and attempt to murder people on the basis of race or religion or ideology. It's truly, truly shameful, and we have to be ever vigilant. So I'm concerned about the ASIO chief's warnings, and I can assure the people of this state we're going to take every measure possible to keep the public safe.
Premier, really good to have you on the program this morning. Thank you so much for making some time. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
That's Chris Minns there, the Premier of New South Wales.